Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dean Summers, Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66 WFAN.
Well, it is. Good evening to you and how you be. At 8:05 even on a Thursday evening on your fan New York City. Steve Summers here and you there. Peter Hoffman, Brian Rascona, Anthony Gallo also on the other side of the glass. 1-877-337-6666. That'd be the number for another 2 hour schmooze of the SPORTS right up until Chris Moore. Chris, coming your way at 10 on your fan New York City, but coming your way now, and we're happy to welcome him once again from the NFL Network, Brian Baldinger. And Brian, hope everything is good.
Everything is good, Steve. I'm down here at the Pro Bowl, working on a new show, Film Sessions, for NFL Network.
Okay.
So we're talking to a number of the players here, sitting in the film room, him and these players and Ron Jaworski. So we're having a great time down here right now, Steve.
Any sleepers that you have at this point noticed? Anybody that you're going to be looking at in particular, Brian?
Well, I mean, we sat down with Taylor Lewan from the Tennessee Titans today, and Melvin Ingram from the Los Angeles Chargers, and George Kittle, who set a record as a receiver for the 49ers this year.
Mm-hmm.
We've had Andrew Luck came in and joined us, and the great Jamal Adams from
yes.
the New York Jets was fantastic. Maybe the best interview we've done all week.
Best player on the Jets.
Yes, very much. And he's going to be helped by the new defensive coordinator, Greg Williams, this year. I think he's really going to take to Greg Williams. I think you're going to see the very best out of Jamal Adams with him as the new defensive coordinator.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because he's going to take no prisoners. Am I correct, Brian? I mean, listen, if you don't listen to what Williams is going to be telling you, look out.
Well, it's interesting, Steve. We had Malcolm Jenkins, who was won a Super Bowl with the New Orleans Saints, coached by Greg Williams, and won a Super Bowl with the Philadelphia Eagles last year. And he was telling us that he still, in his mind, has reminders every game that he goes to that Greg Williams told him as a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
With the New Orleans Saints. They're just hard fact truths about the game and things that he can do to be at his very best game day. And I told that to Jamal Adams, too. I said, if this didn't for Malcolm Jenkins, who's been a great player in this league for 10 years, like that's a great sign that a player of his ilk that's won two Super Bowls can still have that kind of impact on him that much later. I thought it's going to be a good marriage with Jamal, the Jets, and Greg Williams.
And again, I mean, with the tongue in cheek, I'm talking about it. The offense is going to be with the Miami look with Adam Gase and, of course, with Loggins as the offensive coordinator. So you got Bounty Gate on the defensive side, and you got CSI Miami on the offensive side.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll find out what the marriage is like. Sometimes a coach, I mean, Mike Shanahan was a better coach in Denver than he was in Oakland. Bill Belichick was a better coach in New England than he was in Cleveland. Sometimes the second time around, these coaches find, where they belong, and they're in the right place. So he said a lot of good things in order to get the job. He's got to go back it up right now. He's got a great young talent, Sam Darnold. He's going to be 22 years old here next year. So he gets a fresh ball of clay here to kind of mold and put his stamp on him.
Are you going to find a quarterback for the New York Football Giants? And I don't mean necessarily to replace Eli Manning, but to find at least a backup quarterback for Eli Manning for those of us who think that Eli is going to start the 2019 season, Brian.
Well, they've got a lot of time here between free agency, the draft, and the potential trades to find that guy or replace the guy. I mean, they've got decisions to make.
Mm-hmm.
We talked with guys from the Chargers that play with Philip Rivers, and they feel like he's going to play for the next 3 years. I don't think anybody in Pittsburgh is thinking that Ben Roethlisberger is going to step aside, and I know that Eli doesn't want to step aside. So you've got to find, but eventually, everybody has to find the replacement because these guys aren't going to go on forever.
Sure.
And sometimes when they do fall off, they fall off really fast. And so, I mean, I think it's time that the Giants have to really be serious about looking about what the future is going to be.
Sure.
And we found out today that certainly there'll be no trade of John Harbaugh to any team after signing today became official, the 4-year contract extension for him in Baltimore. Brian, before we get into a little bit with the Rams and, of course, the Patriots coming up in a little bit more than in a week, are we ever going to get to the point, as we saw with the AFC and with the NFC championship games, are we ever going to get to the point with the NFL, Brian Baldinger of the NFL Network, are we ever, ever, ever going to get to the point where we can talk about the players and the games they play instead of the officials, Brian?
I hope so, Steve. I hope so, but I have my doubts because of the number of cameras at the games, the ability to slow these things down, the time that they're taking now to check with officials in New York, and almost every single play is under review. And when that happens, I think it slows the game down, and we really lose sight of what some of these rules are. Like, there's no reason, and it can be stated very eloquently by what happened in New Orleans on Sunday, but like, Those kind of plays, you can't get wrong. There's a lot of judgmental plays, Steve, where we can have hearty debates deep into the week about what should have been called, what should happen. But when they're flagrant and they're wrong, that's hard. And when it keeps a team out of the Super Bowl, I talked to Cam Jordan today for the New Orleans Saints. And like, they had the miracle in the Meadowlands the year before that kept them from going on in the playoffs. But this one is going to be hard for them to overcome as a team and as a city, because it's not just a team. The entire city of New Orleans is behind this team, the fan base, and they feel like it was taken away from them. And that's not a good feeling. And so, and there's nothing you can do about it now. It's, you know, we're 4 days later from that. So it goes on, but I hope the game on Sunday, or in a week from Sunday, isn't decided by the Zebras, and that we can actually, we always have a better game, but we're never talking about it. And they're not involved in the game. And so, but I don't know if we can ever go backwards in time like that right now.
Brian, can we review what is now not reviewable? In other words, were something, and this was so egregious, you had the helmet to helmet with the Roby Coleman on Lewis. You had two penalties called, none were called. What can be done to rectify if something as egregious as this happens again? Do you want to replay some pass interference, say, inside the last 2 minutes of the first half, inside the last 2 minutes of the game? What can be done to look at something to avoid this kind of egregious non-call?
Well, I think it's going to be front and center in the NFL all offseason, Steve. And the way it has worked in the past, when there has been a flagrant missed call, it has resulted in some kind of a rule change. And it's a very reactionary business. It always has been. And that's why the rule book is so expanded. One call in one game leads to a change. The Tuck rule was rewritten. And, you know, after what happened between the Raiders and the Patriots. So This missed call will then go into some category, some hopper, like they like to call it, where you get this extra timeout, you get this extra review when it is in the final 2 minutes, final 5 minutes, and it is something so flagrant that nobody should ever miss, that something has to be done to fix it and to get it right in the real time. And so I think something will take place, but I don't know that it will really fix an issue where two guys can miss a call. Like, we've all seen pass interference all year long, but we haven't really seen a call this flagrant. And it just so happened that it really helped decide this game.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just the timing of this call. If this happened in the first quarter, we wouldn't be talking about it. But if it's in the final 90 seconds, we're all talking about it. And it's really hurt another team. And there's a lot of things that you could say about time management of Sean Payton. That game should never have come to that. There's other things that could have been done where they are kicking field goals, scoring touchdowns in the first half. All those kind of things are true. But these games come down to the final couple minutes, and when it's missed like this, I think it's going to lead to a lot of conversation. I think we're going to see some kind of change here, Steve, before the season starts next year.
And you know what? That doesn't guarantee they're going to still get it right.
No.
You can review the non-reviewable over and over again and still not get it right, and it still could lead to more controversy. Although what we saw on Sunday was as egregious as can be, but even with a replay of what is not now, reviewable with the pass interference, doesn't guarantee they get it right, Brian.
No, it doesn't, Steve. And the thing that, these are all-star crews. So they're the best at their positions. So I guess you have to go all the way back to how an official could miss that call. Because these guys are professional. I respect the heck out of them. I've sat in the official meetings in July where they all come together and they start really getting ready and ramped up for the season, go through their physicals and all that. And I know almost all of them over the years. And I know how hard they work at this thing. But you have to go back and go, how can somebody right in front of them miss this call?
And well, here's
and how can one guy get overturned? Like, you have to go back to the genesis of how that can be missed.
I wonder, Brian, if an all-star crew is really a better situation than having a crew that has worked together all season long.
Well, that debate has gone on for a long time too, Steve. Should we just take the best crews? But we want to try and grade these officials on every single game. And so then we go, okay, why should a guy that is the number one line judge in the league, but he's not on a good crew, be penalized and not get a chance to work in the postseason? Because these guys, these officials, look at the postseason the way players and teams do. Like, their goal is to get to the Super Bowl. And so it's a badge of honor. There's bonuses. There's all kinds of things that take place.
See, I was just going to say, Brian, my thinking is that if you have a crew that you've worked with all season long, you can walk up to one of the officials that you work with and know and say, hey, we better throw a flag here. We better huddle. We better get, but with an all-star crew, one all-star official may feel a little bit hesitant talking to another all-star official. So that they could all work together and get through the game together as one. But the bottom line is you got to figure that maybe a crew that is familiar with each other can talk things over in a more direct way.
I agree with you. I totally agree. And we may go back to that, Steve, as a result. I mean, you make all really salient points, and you're spot on. And I think that will be reviewed, because everything, when this happens, has to be reviewed. And are the all-star crews not the way to go?
Mm-hmm.
They're a crew that works, 17 weeks together and has hashed out all kinds of, whether it's issues or multiple fouls or how we get to the bottom of how to officiate this particular play. The communication is just so much more sound and so much more pure amongst seven guys that work every single week together and travel together and spend time watching film together and grade the films together and all that. Is it better to go back so that something like this can't happen again? Because that's really where they have to get to, to make sure that in a game of this magnitude, that this can't happen again. And I'm sure that's where the discussions are going to begin.
How about the Chris Jones roughing the passer on Brady? He was breathing heavy? He was like within a yard or two of Brady? He was reaching over a block.
Yeah.
And maybe touched Brady on the arm, and we have roughing the passer.
Yeah, I mean, the forearm hit the shoulder pad. And from the angle of, whether it was the umpire or referee, I forget who threw the flag in the play, Steve. I mean, they just didn't have a good angle. And they didn't see that what they thought they saw isn't what we saw in replay. And it was, it's a flagrantly wrong call, and it really hurt the Chiefs. in a really tight football game. And so you can – Dee Ford played 81 snaps, Steve, 81 snaps, and he lined up in the neutral zone. Now, I've talked to a number, and I, as a player, officials talk to you all the time. Get up on the line of scrimmage, Baldy, you're too far back. I mean, they kind of get you some warnings before that happens. How can you play 81 snaps and one snap on a play where the ball is intercepted and probably going to decide the game? Dee Ford is now in the neutral zone on that one play. It's unfortunate. It's not the wrong call. He's in the neutral zone. But how is it that 80 other snaps, he was on the right side of the ball?
Do you think, Brian, that Dee Ford cost Sutton his job, or am I oversimplifying here?
Well, I think in overtime, when you have three third and tens and a chance to stop the Patriots from scoring that touchdown, I think it's part of that. Mm-hmm. They did finish the season, Steve, you know, at the bottom of the charts in almost every category. You know, they were not good against the run all year. I think all those kind of things. I mean, Bob Sutton is a quality man. He was a coach of the year at Army, like, and Andy Reid. He loved having Bob. He was on the staff before Andy got there. He kept him. I think it was just one of these meetings where it was best for everybody to go. You lose in a game in overtime where you can't stop the team from scoring a touchdown. I think it starts there. Like, we got to give our MVP quarterback a chance to touch the ball. We can't let them convert three third and tens to go down the field and score a touchdown in the first drive of overtime and not let us get a chance.
And not
so I think it's all those things.
Sure. And not enough said, and Fowler tipping the Breeze interception in their game. We don't talk enough about the defense. I wanted to have you touch on Fowler. I wanted you to touch on, of course, with Sue, who had a very good game. I think he had two consecutive sacks on two plays, of course. And Donald, the Rams, with their defense. I mean, we're talking so much about with the officials and with the penalties and with the overtime in both games, the whole thing. But the defense of the Rams may have to get into the face of a Tom Brady for the Rams to have the chance to pull off the upset, because I guess as an upset, there are a 3-point underdog as we speak right now, Brian.
Well, Wade Phillips, you know, coaches that side of the ball for Sean McVay with the Rams, and Wade Phillips has been around for a long time, you know, Super Bowls and championship-level teams and all of that. Coached a lot of great players, some of the greatest players in the history of this game, from Bruce Smith to J.J. Watt to Von Miller. He's coached a lot of great players, DeMarcus Ware. And so, you know, the Rams went all in this year, Steve. They went on. They made trades for Ndamukong Suh. They brought in Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib. They traded for Dante Fowler Jr. And all those players have made impacts at some point here to make them a more ferocious, a more feared defense, a more big play defense. And so, statistically, they don't look great, but they held the Saints in their own building to 23 points, Steve. So, at the end of the day, the Saints in overtime scored 23 points, you know, and they were a team that was number two in offense all year long, and only to the Kansas City Chiefs did they score fewer. So, they did their job on Championship Sunday, and now they've got the task of, you know, Tom Brady has dropped back to these two playoff games against the Chargers and against the Chiefs, and Tom Brady has dropped back 81 times, Steve. He hasn't been sacked yet, and he's only been hit twice. And so how do you affect Tom Brady in this game? That's where this whole thing starts.
Mm-hmm.
Can you? And talking to guys this week out here at the Pro Bowl, they believe that teams have to challenge him playing man-to-man defense. They can't play zone where Brady can just see the opening and just get the ball out before you can ever get a chance to hit him.
Brian, let me ask you about overtime. It's been a hot topic on the radio station since the two overtime games on Sunday. You like it the way it is, or do you want to see some changes?
Well, we have changed it recently. You know, it used to be the first team that scored, and if it was a field goal, that was enough to end the game. Then they said, okay, if the first team that touches the ball scores a touchdown, that ends the game. And so then the onus was on the opposition's defense to stop a team from scoring the defense. And I think defense is a big part of this game. As much as we want to make it an offensive game, the defense's job is to stop them from going down the field and driving 75 yards and scoring a touchdown. And I'm okay with the way it is right now. I would have loved to seen Patrick Mahomes get a chance. But I think the defense, you know, this is a team game. It's complementary football. The defense has to do their job. If they have to be out there first to stop and to get the ball back to that quarterback. And I think right now that I'm okay with the way it is.
You can imagine, had the Rams not won the game on Sunday, what kind of an issue might have been made about with Sean McVay having his team drive all the way down the field to the one-yard line, having a fourth and one, and he goes for the field goal and not going for the touchdown. That surprised you, Brian?
No, I thought I know how aggressive teams are now, and I understand Drew Brees is on the other side, and you know he's Captain America, you know, in a lot of ways, and he can knows how to finagle the clock and run it down and go win the game. But I thought it was the right call. It was 5.5 minutes to go in the game at that point. I think Sean has some faith in his defense and their ability to make a stop, and it turned out to be the right call. But I wasn't surprised, even with I don't know really what the situation is right now with Todd Gurley. We're all a little fuzzy about, is he injured? Is he being outplayed? Is he being benched? Because we're talking about an MVP candidate that spent a long time on the sideline Sunday.
I was wondering if he had been penalized. Well, we had always heard the last couple of weeks that maybe he wasn't 100%, but he had two drops, and one resulted in the interception that we saw, and then he also missed a block on Eli Apple.
Yep.
So I began to wonder, I'm sure I'm not alone with this, but I began to wonder that maybe he was just going to be benched for a while and they were just going to give all the touches to C.J. Anderson.
Well, I'm right in lockstep with you here, Steve. I was thinking the same thing. And I thought, can a guy that has been as productive as Todd Gurley has been for that team over 2 years, could he be benched over some drops in a missed block?
Right.
And I guess, I mean, all coaches have their way of disciplining players or letting them know what he thinks. If that's the case, that's pretty bold by Sean McVay, because Todd Gurley's helped him win an awful lot of football games here in his first 2 years, and he's made him, in large part, become the coach that everybody is kind of seeking now. They're all looking for Sean McVay because of what he's done. I mean, Todd Gurley did not have a good season before Sean McVay got there, and then he's been this MVP candidate, and then you're putting him on the sideline because of a couple of negative plays. I mean, that's pretty big. Now, maybe C.J. Anderson is good enough, and he has played really, really well, that he can replace him. But my point about being down there on the one-yard line on fourth and one is if Gurley is really healthy and on his game, don't you just give it to Todd Gurley?
Sure.
You got an offensive line that is considered, and I consider him, one of the top three offensive lines of football. I mean, I'd give it to him right there in that spot, just the way Doug Peterson was aggressive in the Super Bowl at the end of the first half last year, went Philly special, and scored a touchdown there on the Patriots and kind of shocked them and all that. I mean, I think you got to be aggressive and score touchdowns when you get a chance to score touchdowns right now.
And you also have with the Sean Payton, after that 43-yarder that Brees connected with, I guess it was with Sammy Watkins. And then, I mean, they could have really run the clock. They're down on the Rams, what is it, the 13-yard line?
Yeah.
And he's passing on first down, you would think.
I was shocked.
Yeah,
oh,
no, I mean, and these, where we were, I mean, with Payton, I mean, brilliant coach. We all know from that. Same with McVay, young and aggressive and certainly in vogue. Everybody wants to have a Payton or a McVay. But here you had with Payton, and you're on the 13-yard line, you're stopping the clock on first down and not having the Rams use.
Down,
yeah, and not having the Rams use their timeouts. They could have taken the clock down to, what, 10 seconds, maybe after kicking a field goal.
Well, I wonder, Steve. I mean, I'm writing these notes down in real time when I'm watching this game on Sunday. And I'm doing the math in my head if you just run the clock. And I just wonder sometimes if these coaches are just, I have so many thoughts running through their head that they can't simply think clearly about the clock and the time, because these time management issues keep popping up all the time with these guys. And we're all in lockstep that these are great coaches in some level, but when it matters most in that situation you're talking about, running the ball was the right call. It's just the right call because the clock has to be the enemy.
Yeah.
And you're in control of the game. And then they pass the ball, and, you know, so you get an incomplete, and then you run it, and then you're throwing it on third down, it's incomplete, and you stopped it. You've saved all this time for the Rams.
And, you know, very puzzling when you see some of these things from two coaches who have earned the respect of fans of every NFL team, that's for sure. Now, with the Super Bowl coming up, Shady Brady and Bill Belichick, and we were talking earlier in the program, they are
spoken like true New Yorkers right there, Steve. Yes.
They are, certainly, listen, we want to be fair, we want to be objective. But we're not, Brian, and you know we want the Rams to win this game. Here's the bottom line. Are the Rams going to win this game? Is Goff going to be a little famished as he was in the very beginning of that game in New Orleans when the Rams only had 15 yards of total offense in that first quarter, Brian?
No. They couldn't sustain any offense. He did make a number of big throws, though. In the second half of that game in overtime, a number of big-time throws that you got to make.
Oh,
look,
sure.
He's going to have to make between 5 and 7 throws, Steve, in this game to win the game, where he's got to be as good as he's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what you have to do. Nick Foles did that last year in the Patriots. They put up 41 points. They won the game. I'm really curious with Sean McVay, 2 weeks to get ready, the ideas and the concepts of what he's going to do. What Bill Belichick did to Kansas City on Sunday was as good a coaching job as you're going to find. Tyreek Hill was unstoppable all year long.
Mm-hmm.
And he double-teamed him every single snap. Mm-hmm. And he got one ball the whole day. And I didn't see anybody take Tyreek Hill out of the game.
Right.
Until Bill Belichick did. And so he
knows and Kelsey also was invisible.
Well, they played 4 cornerbacks, and they had never done that before. J.C. Jackson was out there, and they went with these quarterbacks in man coverage, and they took Devin McCourty, and he was basically the MVP of the game. Like, his job was to play over the top of wherever Tyreek Hill was. And it was masterful. It was clever, masterful, and just nobody had ever done it all year long. And you wonder, like, how does he keep coming up with these formulas? But he's just thinks differently than everybody else.
And you mentioned Jackson. Jackson had a nightmare. If I recall, Brian, Jackson had a nightmare fourth quarter. 2 pass interference calls and a holding call.
He did.
All on Jackson, and still they won. Can the Rams win this game February 3rd, Brian?
They can. They can win this game. You know, I mean, because the one thing that the Rams present, Tom Brady can escape all of the Cam Jordans of the world, Von Millers of the world, he can step up. But if he can elude the outside. But if he can't step up because Aaron Donald is coming or Ndamukong Suh is coming, that gives him the most problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those two guys could be so disruptive that, now I know he knows how to get rid of the ball in less than 2 seconds. But that's where Wade Phillips has to go, look, we brought Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters in a corner. You've got to go up and play Julian Edelman and these players, man to man, and you got to disrupt them at the line of scrimmage so that Brady has got to hold the ball. Because if he plays this game in a pair of Bermuda shorts and flip flops like he has the first 2 games, where he doesn't get touched, then the Rams have no chance. They've got to make him hold the ball long enough so that Aaron Donald and Sue and these guys, Brockers, can be disruptive and not let him step up into these throws.
Brady is the slowest quarterback in the game, and he never gets sacked. And a lot of it is what you just said. Why? Because of that quicker release.
Well, in some ways, the game just keeps getting easier because he's got 18 years of experience. So no matter what you want to try to do, he's got a counter to it. And he's got it at the line of scrimmage. So at some point, you have to got to show your defense and what you're doing. You got to line up. You got to show your blitz. You got to show your coverage. And he'll wait you out. And then once he waits you out, he still has, within seconds, the ability to change the play, to change the route, to change the protection. Because he's got more, you know, there's an old line, Steve, that the problem with experience is by the time you get enough of it, you're too old to enjoy it. Well, Brady has still got time to enjoy it.
And that Edelman is a piece of work.
He's as tough as they come, man.
Isn't
his blocking of those 2 touchdown runs by Sony Michel on Sunday were just these crushing blocks that You know, and I don't know if the ball touched his thumb yet, Steve, or not. I don't know. Like, I saw the thing blown up 100 times, and I saw the replay 100 times, and I still don't know if that ball and that punt touched his thumb or not. It's not a smart play on his part. You should just let that thing go. But he's about as dependable as they come. That catch 2 years ago against the Falcons is still one of the great plays in the history of the Super Bowl.
And nobody can find him. He's too small.
He's
too small, and he comes up big all the time. Brian, I can't thank you enough. And let me mention this. At Baldy NFL, am I correct?
You are absolutely correct, Steve.
Brian, I can't thank you enough for a good half hour here, and your time is so precious to all of us and always informative and informational, the whole thing already. Can't thank you enough, Brian. Do take care of yourself.
I will do that, Steve. Thanks. Have a great night, and I'll probably talk to you Super Bowl week at some point, Steve.
I certainly hope so. Thanks a lot. Brian Baldinger,
you bet.
Brian Baldinger of the NFL Network. We'll take a break. Get right back to your calls.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.